Hello, this is Micronews, the podcast where Laura and I
Hello.
Talk about some of the times that microbiology has been in the news this month.
Before we start, I would like to talk about the one microbe that has been totally dominating the news lately. During the last two episodes of Micronews, we've had a segment at the end of the episode discussing the outbreak of COVID-19. Since we last recorded an episode, the World Health Organization declared a global pandemic, and many countries around the world, including here in the UK, have been put under lockdown. So Matt and I are not together to record this episode. We are not in the office. We are in our respective homes and social distancing according to government guidelines. If you're anything like me, you are being completely bombarded with information and news on the outbreak and probably don't want to hear any more about it. So we've decided to make this episode a coronavirus-free zone. I would urge you to visit trusted websites like the World Health Organization's website, ukgov.org, and nhs.uk for any information on the virus or the disease.
If you would like us to resume our coronavirus roundups in the next month's episode, we're totally open to that. Just let us know by leaving a comment on the podcast or getting in touch on social media.
So my first story is about a species of bacteria that could be the answer to solving the plastic pollution problem. Polyurethane is used in hard, dense plastics, like in fridges and other furniture, but it's really difficult to recycle. The main thing that makes polyurethane so difficult to recycle is that it can't be melted once the plastic is hardened. Of course, polyurethane has its uses. It's lightweight, insulating, and flexible, but everything comes to an end, and polyurethane accounts for 3.5 million tons of Europe's annual plastic waste. Another concerning feature of these plastics is that when they degrade in the environment, toxic chemicals called TDA and MDA can be released. Now, these are chemicals listed as substances of very high concern by the European Chemical Agency, and they're in the carcinogenic, mutagenic, or toxic to reproduction category. So they're pretty bad. TDA has already been shown to cause cancers in studies, so it's really important to control the amount of polyurethanes in the environment.
What's a mutagen? Something that causes mutations?
Yeah, exactly. It causes mutations, which I guess, you know, some tumours aren't cancerous or some mutations aren't from cancers, so it may cause birth defects even. But the good news is, while looking for a solution to plastic pollution, researchers from Germany isolated a new species of Pseudomonas in soil from a landfill site that contained large amounts of plastic waste. The bacteria produce enzymes that break down the strong chemical bonds that make up polyurethane plastics. The plastic is then converted into carbon, nitrogen, and energy, which the microbes use as essential nutrients. This could be a really important development in reducing plastic pollution, and if scientists can harness the abilities of this unique bacterium, waste polyurethanes could be used as sources of energy in the future.
There is some interesting research coming from Oregon State University. They are using bacteria to clean up contaminated groundwater. Contaminated groundwater can lead to contaminated reservoirs and other water bodies, becoming dangerous for humans and wildlife. The research group developed hydrogel beads. They contain bacteria and a slow-release food supply, and the bacteria breaks down the contaminants into harmless compounds. The group has actually developed a new process called long-term aerobic co-metabolism. The research group are particularly excited about this new development, as the current process requires pumping of methane or propane into the contaminated water to act as a gas substrate. However, this doesn't work very well, as bacteria compete over the gas, so it isn't very efficient. The new method works so well because the whole process occurs inside the beads, removing competition.
So, if the bacteria are in the beads, how do they get to the contaminants?
Because the beads are made from hydrogel, they are permeable to water, so as the water flows past the beads, the contaminated water diffuses into the beads, is purified, and then can diffuse out again.
Oh, cool. So it's like a little filter.
Yeah, pretty much. So the idea is, because obviously groundwater is way down in the ground, they're kind of working out the best way of putting the beads in the way of the groundwater. So they're thinking of either making sort of big barriers of these things way down in the ground so the groundwater just flows straight through them, or putting them into the water supply. They're not sure yet, but either way, it's very exciting.
My next story is about a cancer drug called paclitaxel. Paclitaxel is used to treat a number of forms of cancer, including bladder, breast, prostate, and lung. This chemical was first discovered 35 years ago in the bark of a Pacific yew tree. So far, chemical synthesis of this compound has been challenging, and the drug can still only really be made using the bark of these trees. The older the tree, the more paclitaxel in its bark. This has obvious issues for mass production of the cancer drug, and researchers in Egypt have been searching for microorganisms that could be used as an alternative. 100 species of fungi have so far been identified that are capable of producing the compound, but none of them produce it in high enough volumes or as efficiently as trees do. Using radiation and special calcium alginate gel beads, the researchers have been able to increase production of paclitaxel by 2 mutant strains of the fungi. These hyper-producing mutant strains of fungi are able to produce commercial quantities of paclitaxel, which is a really promising development for future drug production.
My second story is that researchers have discovered compounds that are able to kill Candida auris. Candida auris is a yeast that can cause candidiasis, often acquired in hospitals, by people with compromised or weakened immune systems. The fact that a compound has been found that can kill Candida auris is big news, as it's highly resistant to pretty much all antifungal drugs and can persist on surfaces for a long time, making it a very dangerous pathogen, particularly in hospitals. The class of compound are called rockoglates. They were first discovered in mahogany bark and have primarily been investigated as anti-cancer agents.
Do they know how the rockoglates stop the Candida infections?
So they inhibit translation initiation, which is basically how cells start to synthesize proteins, and that leads to the cell dying from either apoptosis or autophagy.
So my final story is something that we're both quite familiar with, and it was in the news just today. Researchers in Australia have been investigating the microbiome of Krefft's river turtles. These are a protected species and can only be found in Queensland, Australia. Not many studies have been conducted on the normal, healthy microbiota of turtles, especially not one as rare as these. But a diverse microbiome is really important in health, and in some reptiles, microbiome composition has been shown to protect against certain viruses. So it's really important to understand what a healthy microbiome looks like and what it might be influenced by. Dr. Donald McKnight, researcher at the University of New England, swabbed 6 wild turtles collected from the Ross River. He collected samples from the tops of their heads, inside their mouths, and on the shell, both near algal growth and where there was no algae. Now, the algae on turtles' shells is pretty special, and it's a unique genus that's seen almost exclusively on turtles. It's important in providing camouflage to the turtles and has an ecological role in dispersing seeds around a habitat. Dr. McKnight found that this algae affected the microbiome of the shell, and different groups of bacteria were seen where the algae was not present. Hopefully, these findings can be used in the future to help understand how to improve the health of turtles in captivity and improve conservation efforts.
So, I'm sure by now you've heard about the death in China from hantavirus. It received a lot of coverage as people were worried it was going to be another pandemic. But in this case, I have good news. One of our members, Agnieszka Zeimel, who is a research fellow at the MRC University of Glasgow Centre for Virus Research, spoke to Newsweek and said we should not be concerned. Hantaviruses are not a new disease, and human-to-human transmission is incredibly rare. So, just a bit about hantaviruses. They are named after the Hantan River in South Korea, where an early outbreak was observed, and humans get infected by them through contact with rodent urine, saliva, or feces. So, mice and voles and those kind of animals. Thanks for listening. If you've enjoyed the episode, please let us know on social at microbiosoc. As usual, if you see any stories that you'd like to talk about next month, just let us know.